All right, today one-on-one comes to you from the Carmel home of Colts center Jeff Saturday. And Jeff, we will get right into your story. You were born in Atlanta, right? That area. And how did your interest in football develop, or your love for football?
Well, growing up, you know, I watched the Falcons, and you know, they were kind of an average team at the time. My dad liked the Cowboys, and enjoyed, you know, Danny White and some of those guys, watching those guys. And so we'd watch a little football, but I was never, you know, really sold out to one sport. I had grown up, I played soccer growing up, I played baseball. My mom actually didn't let me play football until, I want to say, fifth or sixth grade. So I didn't necessarily start at the earliest age I could, but that was plenty of time for me, and I had a good time, but that's really when it began.
She was afraid you'd get hurt?
Yeah, you know, she raised my sister and I by herself, didn't really know anything about football, and I was active in soccer, I was active in baseball and all kinds of other sports, and so her trying to push me into a game she didn't really know a whole lot about, obviously the violence of the game, she was not, you know, on the top of her list. So her boss, actually, Ray Umfenauer, and his son Chip actually helped teach me how to play football. I got my pads, you know, for the upcoming league, and they went over and showed me how to play and what to do and how to hit the bag. I actually made the travel team the first time I played, but I never got to play. I wasn't good enough to get on the field, and so it was miserable. You know, I didn't enjoy it. So the next year, I went down to the rec. I got to play. And that's really when I fell in love with, I played running back and linebacker and just had so much fun just getting in and being able to play during the games. And that's really when I realized, you know, it didn't matter what level you play, you just want to go play to have fun.
Yeah. So I was going to ask what positions you played at first, because I don't think any kid grows up thinking, I want to be an NFL center. You know?
Yeah, no, you know, it was funny. I played running back and linebacker. And then when I got into high school, I was playing fullback and defensive end, and the guard broke his leg. And, you know, natural position for a fullback. We didn't really use a ton of fullback or two back, and we really wanted to be more of a split back type offense. And so they asked me if I'd move to guard and play, and I did. And I played guard all the way through high school. Never played center until I got to college, and then I moved over to center. They asked if, you know, who liked making calls, who liked being in charge, and it just kind of fit my personality.
Yeah. Okay. Do you come from an athletic family? I mean, did your parents participate in sports?
My mom played basketball. My dad was into track and that kind of thing, but not, you know, no higher level than a high school or, you know, that kind of stuff. But I was always encouraged. My mom kept me in sports my whole life. You know, it was. And even going through high school, if you didn't want to play a sport, you had to have a job. So I chose the lesser of the two evils. I decided to stay in sports, and it was a great way, man, keep me off the streets and keep me out of trouble. And I had a ton of fun doing it. It let me burn off a lot of energy that I had. So
yeah.
I really enjoyed playing.
What other sports in high school did you play?
I played soccer in high school. I played baseball in high school. I wrestled in high school, and I did a little bit of track, kind of in a tweener type thing. I wasn't really a track person, but I threw the shot put in the discus 1 year, just in the interim until baseball season started. Mm-hmm. You know, just looking to fill bodies. So I did it. I mean, I tried to do it all, and had a lot of fun. Soccer was probably my favorite sport until 10th grade, and I had to kind of make the decision, was I going to go baseball or soccer? And if there's anything I would look back and probably change, I probably would have stayed with soccer, because I was an average baseball player. You know, nothing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could start on my high school team and play, but I wasn't ever going to be anything more than that. I should have just stuck with soccer. I really loved it, and my kids play it now, so it's a fun game to watch.
Did your soccer background help you in football with agility and footwork and so forth? Or?
Oh, for sure. You know, first of all, you run all the time, and so, you know, if there's anything I encourage parents now is, you know, don't think that your son has to be a 300-pound offensive lineman when he's in eighth grade. It doesn't, you know, there's no need for it. No, so running was by far the most important. I was athletic, so I could move around and do different things. You know, even when I was playing football, I did a lot of things, you know, playing tight end or moving around or shifting around just to stay in that athletic mode. And so I think soccer did a really good job of training me at hand-eye coordination, being able to get your body in the right position to take somebody over, to be able to run and break down before you get to something. So there's a ton of parallels.
Mm-hmm. So you're a guard in high school. How, you know, you got a college scholarship, I know, but how good were you and how good was your team in football?
We were an okay team. We were an average high school team, 7-3 type team. We made the playoffs one time, which was the first time in 15 years, I think, at our high school. And we lost to the eventual state champions. They beat us in the first round of the playoffs. So, but we had done a lot to turn the team around. We were 3-7 my freshman year, and then 7-3. You know, so we got to be a good football team, and we had a lot of fun. I had a lot of guys who, you know, I watched become really good football players. I was all state. You know what? I can't remember if I was all state on defensive line or offensive line, but I was on one of them. So yeah, I had a good name, you know, coming out of high school. Atlanta's a big area, so there's a lot of highly recruited players, and I was probably in the middle of the pack of those guys.
So you went to North Carolina, but did you look at a lot of different schools, and what was the recruiting process like? And did the Georgia come after you? Or?
I did. You know, I looked at a lot of different schools. Georgia and Georgia Tech did not. Georgia Tech looked for really big offensive linemen. They wanted, you know, huge human beings at the time, and that I think was Bill Lewis. And Ray Goff was at Georgia, and if there was any place I wanted to go, that's where I wanted to go. Yeah, I grew up being a Georgia fan. But they didn't recruit me. And North Carolina recruited me, Auburn, you know, a lot of schools, Clemson. I didn't know what my future was going to be. I knew I needed to get a good education. And my parents, my mom's a teacher, and my stepdad were very influential and say, hey, listen, you know, football is a great game, but it's you're one play away from, you know, having to rely on your education. Let's try to do the best we can. And at the time when we looked at all those schools, we felt like North Carolina was the best of both worlds. They were a good football team and had a great education.
Mm-hmm. When you were in high school, was the NFL a goal? Or were you not even thinking in those
times? Nah. You know, I never really considered myself a pro prospect until my junior year. And I had played as a redshirt freshman. I played and started as a sophomore. But I didn't think, I don't know, I just never even thought about the NFL until my junior year. They bring these people in to tell you about where you'd be rated. You know, they told me, hey, you'd be rated, you know, the eighth best center in the college right now or something. And so that's really the only time I even felt like, because I was always an undersized guy. Uh-huh. And I was playing on a team in college that was about the option. So there's not a lot of teams that are going to run the option in the NFL. And then my junior year, we brought in a more pro-style guy, Greg Davis, who's now at the University of Texas. He became our offensive coordinator. And so then we became a pro style offense. And so I got to learn a little, you know, different. But before that, it was all option. We were running and gunning, man, and cut blocking and doing all those things.
Yeah. So you moved from guard to center at North Carolina. And you kind of did it voluntarily because you liked the idea of being the leader on the line.
And... Well, yeah, I signed at North Carolina as a nose guard, as a defensive tackle, actually. Mm. And when I got there, Marcus Jones was there. Andre Purvis, Vonnie Holiday, I mean, all these guys who end up going to the NFL and as first rounders and second rounders, and they were all these high draft picks, and there was just no way I was going to play. I mean, they were better players than I was, and so the offensive line coach came over. He said, hey, listen, you know, we recruited you as a defensive lineman. We know you had a great career as an offensive lineman. You can play much earlier if you decide to come to this side of the ball. But I need a guy who's going to be a leader. I need a guy who you know, can take control of a situation. You feel like that, you know, you can do that. I said, absolutely. And so he handed me a football. He said, all right, you're going to play center. And he said, you know, it'll be a good fit for you. And I began snapping the ball. That was Eddie Williamson, who was my offensive line coach. And he started coaching me from that point of being a center.
Did you always kind of consider yourself a leader? Did that come naturally to you?
Yeah, probably just my personality. I know that I would consider myself a leader at the time, but my personality, I'm outgoing, you know, I'm outspoken. So it was never hard for me to call a situation what I thought it was.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in an area, it's very blue collar, middle to lower middle class. So probably just a general, from the kids in my neighborhood, that's probably how we all were. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't any real sugarcoating. Yeah. You know, you didn't grow up, you know, not understanding the world. You know, I tell my kids all the time, they're probably naive to a lot more things than I was at our age, just because, you know, my parents worked. I was a latchkey kid, so I came home, my sister and I, by ourselves from a very young age. And, you know, you had to cook for yourself, clean, you know, those kind of things. And so I probably had that kind of, that upbringing probably led to a lot of me feeling uncomfortable to speak my mind.
Yeah. Were you in activities in high school, you know, student government or that kind of thing as well?
I was actually the vice president of my class my senior year, but I was never really super involved because of athletics. I was always in all the sports stuff. And so, you know, all those different things kind of, or maybe my junior and senior year, but all those activities kind of bordered around, you know, whether it was homecoming game or whatever. But I was always very involved in my high school and in my college. I believe in being part of the community you're in, and I had a lot of fun at both those places.
Yeah. Okay, so coming out of college, were you surprised not to be drafted?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, when I came out, I thought that, you know, I had been rated high my junior year, and when I came out, I went into the combine as the third rated center going in by Mel Kiper, you know, those kind of groups. And then I went to the combine, and like I said, I was undersized. You know, I was a 285-pound, you know, 6'2.5" center, and you know, they just decided that wasn't what they wanted. And so a lot of teams looked at me and said he didn't have the size. His, you know, I used to hear things, his arms aren't long enough to play, whatever that means. I mean, I blocked guys for five years in college. They're all playing the NFL. How could they all of a sudden not work? You know, but those are the excuses that you get. And my roommate actually in college, who never started at North Carolina, went to the Giants as an undrafted college free agent. And he was playing there, and he got released there, and he went to the Colts. And he went in about a month after he was with the Colts and sat down with Bill Polian. And he said, hey, listen, I've been on two teams. I played against four centers and, you know, different other centers in different teams. I'm telling you, my roommate in college is better than all of them. You should give him a chance. And Bill was with the Panthers when I was at UNC, so he knew my name, he had watched me play, and he tells me now, he said, yeah, I'd always liked you as a player, but all the other scouting guys said the same thing. You're undersized, you know, just not, and he said, yeah, I figured I'd give him a chance and, you know, and see what happens. And so mm-hmm. they brought me in to work out, and the rest is history.
And who was this guy who went to Mr. Poyan on your behalf?
Nate Hobgood-Chittick, and he was my college roommate for all 5 years. And he and his wife, Kelsey, live out in California. In fact, I just saw him a few weeks ago. He and my other roommate, Chris Keldorf, who was our quarterback. And just a good human being, man. And I tell people all the time, it would be similar to you walking in to your CEO of your big business and sitting down with him. You know, Polian probably barely knew his name mm-hmm. or who he was. You know, he was probably the 53rd guy on the roster at the time. But Bill had enough respect for his players and just said, you know, hey, give him a chance and no promises. But that's the kind of guy Bill is, and that was the kind of guy that that Nate is.
You owe that guy, don't you?
Oh, I owe him huge. He reminds me of it all the time.
I bet.
He played for 5 or 6 years in the NFL. So he won a Super Bowl with the Rams. He was with the Chiefs, Giants, Colts. I mean, he played and he had a heck of a career.
Well, but your first attempt in the NFL was with Baltimore. You signed a free agent contract with Baltimore in April of 98, and you released in June. At that time, did you feel like football's done for me? I didn't make it? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I went to Baltimore, the draft and all that kind of stuff had been done, and I walked into Baltimore, and these guys were all giants. You know, they're all, I think their average line was, they were the biggest line in the NFL. I think they averaged 330 at the time, 330 pounds. And, you know, I'm a 280-pound center. That just doesn't fit. So when I walked in the room, I knew this was going to be bad. But I started playing. I actually was playing well. And Kirk Ferentz, who's now the Iowa head coach, was their offensive line coach. He said, man, you know, you're playing good. Just keep battling and keep fighting. And I think you'll go places in this league. And about a day or two after that, they cut me. So I'm thinking, wow, This is how it works in the NFL. And yeah, you know, I had seen he and his assistant later on. They said, we got no control over those kind of things. It's a business, and it's all numbers at the time. But God had better plans, man, and he brought me to Indianapolis, and I got no regrets with the way it played out.
Yeah. What was your gut reaction when he got cut? Did you think, hey, I'm going to prove him wrong and make it, or were you thinking, I'm going to look for something else to do?
No, I got a job. I actually started working for an electric supply company in North Carolina, and I was working for a guy named Katie Kennedy, who was a Duke grad, and so that was a humbling experience right off the jump, man. But he was a fantastic guy, and he was teaching me the business, and he was teaching, it was a very young group who was working there near him, and he was training us all, and we had a great, great business. And I was working out, but I never really anticipated going to the NFL. I thought maybe I could jump in with the arena team somewhere, and I actually had signed a deal with, at the time it was the Firebirds, who were in New York before they came to Indiana. And I had signed a letter of intent with them that I would go there at the end of the year. But that was up pretty much all I thought. I figured, I could go make some money and have fun, play some more football, and then, go into a career. So I'd never anticipated the way it all played out.
Yeah. What kind of career would you have gone into?
I don't know. People ask me all the time. I liked that business that I was in. I felt like there was a lot of potential for growth in it. But, all the guys who I started with ended up going to different companies and branching out, and they really grew into their own. So I don't know how it would have all shaken down. I like the business world. I like the aspect of working and building up different relationships at different companies and growing your business that way. I didn't have a background in engineering, so I had a lot of catching up as far as when they're building buildings, what your electrical specs are going to be and why. So that was interesting for me to learn, why an I-line panel, why different things would go in different areas and how much power places used. So there was a lot of interesting things that were happening, as well as learning the aspect of selling yourself and your product.
This contract that you had signed with the arena team, how much was that going to pay you?
You know what? I don't even know.
Yeah.
I don't know. At the time, it wasn't about the money. I just wanted to go play and, get an opportunity.
So did you just one day get a call from Mr. Pullian saying, hey, we want you to try out with the Colts?
It was just like that. They called and said, we want you to come up and work out, and we're not promising you anything. We want to see, what kind of shape you're in. And it was in December, so the season was over. So I had been out of football for almost a year at that point. And I said, well, sure, I'll come up. And so they flew me up in January. So it was right after the season ended, or February maybe. And it was funny because they took me down to the RCA Dome. It was snowing in Indiana, in Indianapolis. And so I go down to the RCA Dome, and I walk in, and it's a bunch of punters and me. And because they asked me if I could long snap, and I lied. I said, yeah, absolutely, I can long snap. I'd never long snapped before, but I was like, anything I can do to get an opportunity, I'll do it. And so I'm practicing long snapping every day at my apartment up to this point. So we go into the RCA Dome, and this literally is one strip of turf, the old AstroTurf.
Yeah.
It was literally just one strip right in the middle of the yard. That was all that we had. And they were like, snap on it, let me see how you can run. And so I'm snapping to all those punters, and they're timing me. And, they asked me to run around, so I ran around some. And They told me they weren't going to work me out like lifting wise, but they brought me back to the Colts facility. They said, let me see you lift. So I sat down, I lifted weights, and I was getting dressed and showering. They had told us they weren't going to tell anybody if we were going to sign. They'd call us later on. And they walked in and said, we decided we're going to sign you. Will you sign? I was floored. I was like, absolutely, I'll sign. And so I called my wife and I said, maybe I'm gonna give this thing a go. And, what do you think? And she was behind me. And, in fact, KD, I called him, and he said, I'll keep your job for as long as you want to play. So 12 years later, I don't think he's still holding my position. But he was very nice about it. He was very generous because he knew I was scared. I didn't have any job security. And so, it was kind of like just God had worked it out.
Yeah, that's January of 99. I'm curious, when you're practicing your long snapping at the apartment, are you outside the apartment complex?
I was right outside. I actually had this little piece right beside my apartment, and a buddy who played football for Western Carolina, Ben Bergamini, married, if you can imagine this, a girl from my high school that my wife and I were very good friends with. So they lived in the apartment complex right with us. And so he would walk over, and I would snap to him and practice, and he and I would go out and run around, and I was lifting and training, and you know, we'd do stuff, and he ended up actually coming to work with me. And so we were working at the same place, and he'd help me out. And it just, you know, this little grass patch right out in my apartment. we practiced snapping, and we had a great time, though, man. It was my wife and I look at those. Those were great times. You know, two-bedroom apartment, just she and I, and, you know, just making it happen.
Yeah, was your wife working then?
Yeah, she's a physical therapist. Mm-hmm. So I tell everybody, she was my sugar mama. You know, she would she'd pay all the bills, because she was definitely making the lion's share at the time. She would go to work, and we lived 5 minutes from where she worked, and really 10 minutes from where I worked. So yeah. It was perfect, and we were right by, you know, it was a young area, so there was a lot of people our age, and we made some great friends and had a lot of fun being where we were.
Now, did the Colts offer you that contract based on your weightlifting or on your snapping, or what was it that got their eye?
You know what, man? I have no idea. Because after I left, they told me I didn't pass the eyeball test and that I better get in shape. And they said all kinds of things. I was like, I don't know why they signed me. I really don't. I know I couldn't have snapped that well. And when I got here, Howard Mudd, he told me, he said, Howard laughs all the time. He said, for 6 months, I didn't even know you played offensive line. I thought you were just a long snapper. And I said, for 6 months, I didn't know what I was. I just knew I didn't want anybody to know my name. Just keep my head down, show up to work out, and go home. So I was trying to steal as much time as I could.
Yeah, now did your wife come up with you right away, or did she stay back there with her job?
She stayed back because, like I said, I didn't know that I was going to make the team. I had really no idea. And so that first preseason, I played pretty good and felt like I had played well enough to make the team, but didn't know. And Howard Mudd looked at me and said, hey, listen, just calm down. You know, you're going to be a good player in this game. Don't, you know, let your mind play tricks on you. And he's a real cerebral type coach, so he doesn't want you to talk yourself out of being a good player. And so I really try to do that. I just try to slow the game down and go play and have fun. But I didn't want her to drive up. I didn't want her to move up because she was making very good money at the time. And I didn't know. You know, I told her, I said, they can cut me any time and my pay ends. You know, it's a one-year contract, and if I got hurt, it was split in half. I mean, so it wasn't like I was making, you know, just tons of money. I tell this story all the time. I said, the first practice that we made, you know, you make cuts on Sunday, and then that Monday you come in for a practice. Tuesday you have off, and then Wednesday kind of begins the season. And so that Monday, my roommate Nate Hobgood-Chittick and I both thought we had made the team. So we were looking for apartments to share because we had been sharing an apartment here. And so we're driving around, and he got a call on his phone, and they cut him on that Monday. And so now I'm really shocked because I thought, hey, we had made the cuts. A day later, now they had cut him. So Tuesday goes by, and then I come back in Wednesday, and we're in our first practice. I'm playing scout team. You know, I'm giving the one defensive look, and it's all of us. It's Jason Johnson, myself, Waverly Jackson, Larry Moore. We're all giving the defensive look, and Jim Mora went off and just starts screaming at us and tells us, I'll fire every one of you. I got 100 guys looking for your job. And I looked over at Jason Johnson, who was the center at the time, a kid from Kansas State. He looked at me and goes, he's telling the truth, he'll cut us all. And so I called my wife that night. I said, do not move up here. You keep your job until this season is over, because this is not looking good. But we held out like that for probably till October or November. And then she moved up. So okay. I figured I had enough saved at that point. We could at least make it for a little bit.
So you started two of the games that year at left guard, right, in 99?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I started, my first game I ever started was against Philadelphia. Steve McKinney, who was our starting left guard, had an emergency appendectomy. And it didn't happen until Saturday. He started getting sick on Saturday. So I didn't practice the whole week. And, you know, I take whatever reps, you know, you would get as a backup. And so I'd probably get two or three reps with the ones during the week leading up. And he tells me, he goes, I'm just not feeling good, because he was my roommate on the road. I was like, well, I'll see you on the plane, you know, and we'll just take it easy. We'll hang out in the room and everything will be fine. And I'm going to get on the plane, and Howard Mudd is standing at the end of the stairs. He said, McKinney's having surgery in an hour. You're the starting left guard for tomorrow. And, man, I thought I was going to throw up. I was like, what? And so I walked, and the thing was, he sat beside me on the plane. He was my roommate on the road. So literally that whole plane flight to Philly and the whole night leading up to the game, I got nobody to talk to. I'm just sitting in a room by myself. And I'm calling my mom, calling everybody, and I said, you know, I'm going to get my first start. I'm nervous, you know, I'm scared, I'm all those things. One of the guys I played with in college actually lived in Philly, so he and his wife were coming to the game to meet my wife. So Karen actually got to see my first start ever, just, you know, by happenstance. So yeah. it was a good deal.
So how did that game go, your first start? Did you play well?
I did. The first play of the game, I jumped off sides. So it started out like a freight train. It was, silent count. And I saw Peyton move, flinch in my eye, and I fired off the ball. I hit the defensive tackle as hard as I could hit him. And Tarik Glenn looked over, he's like, hey, settle down, man. We got a long game. But after that, I settled down. I played really well. And I got a game ball because I had sprung Edgerrin for a huge run, like an 85-yard touchdown run or something. And so it was a great start. And I started there the next week. And then I moved over to right guard and started rotating every other series with Waverly Jackson at right guard.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you were a backup right guard that game as well, one game that season as well. At that time, did you think your future was as a guard? Or were you still thinking you'd wind up at center?
No, you know, at the time, I didn't care. Wherever they could fit me in, I would play. And I felt comfortable at all three of those positions and still do. I enjoy all of them. And so I never really had a preference. And then at the end of the season, Howard brought Larry Moore and myself in. He said, hey, listen, I'm going to give you guys a chance to battle it out at center. And whoever gets that spot, the other one will go to guard. And, you know, that's kind of the way we're going to shake it down. And so I went in and I played well at center. And, you know, I had played it in college. So it was a good fit for me. Larry had played guard and tackle in college. So he just moved back over to guard. And that was the way that we set it up.
Yeah, I would think on the Colts more than any other NFL team, center is probably a cerebral position. You know, because of Peyton and how he handles the offense.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's in fact, Jacques McClendon, who now is we just drafted him this past year, and he was telling me, he said, you know, it's so much more difficult than anticipated just because of how fast things happen. You have to change something in your mind, and you got to change your footwork, or you got to change your blocking technique, or you got to change a call and snap it, or deal with the silent part, you know, all those different things that play a role. So it probably is. If you look around the game, our team in particular is probably one of those that you have to mentally, you got to be up for the challenges as well as physically.
Yeah. Is it possible to take people through a play call and what your responsibility is and what all goes on the line on a particular call, or if there's an audible or whatever, just to give people an indication of what it's like in the line?
Yeah, I mean, you know, usually when we come, we don't huddle, so there's not like a play call, there's not a huddle call. As we're getting up there, we're screaming plays. So he may call out two or three different plays. He may call out a scat protection. He may call out a run, a strong run. He may call out, an audible. So you have to be ready for all three of those things kind of happening. As you're approaching the line of scrimmage, I see the defense, so I'm alerting everybody to what defense they're running. So if they're in a nickel defense, I'm alerting them to they're in a nickel. If they're in a dime prevent, I'm calling that. If they're in a regular 3-4 or a 4-3, I'm alerting everybody to what's out there. And then I'll make a mic call that kind of sets the defense to the middle of who we're considering for that protection or that run play, who the middle player is. And it doesn't necessarily mean we're responsible for that player. It just means that's where our count begins. So now everybody knows where they can make their counts or where they're beginning their count off of. And then as Peyton goes through his pre-snap reads, he's going through and he's calling a play. And then I'll have a call that addresses that play. So if it's a run, there may be a call that I make to the right guard to tell him how we're going to block it. Or if it's a pass, I may tell everybody, this is where we're going to block, this is who we're responsible for, and then they'll make associated calls with that. So there's a lot of communication that goes on, a lot of talking you know, as in that 40 or 35 seconds that you're hustling through it.
Yeah, you and Peyton are both talking almost nonstop, aren't you, throughout, until the ball snapped?
Yeah, absolutely. But most of the time, he's talking to the backs and the receivers, and I'm talking to the line and tight ends. And so, you know, even as we're talking, as long as he hears the beginning of it from me and I hear the beginning of it from him, the rest of it, you know, I don't have to listen to necessarily until we get into that final, you know, 5 or 10 seconds, and then we got to make sure we're both on the same page.
Is it ever hard for your other linemen to hear you?
Oh yeah, it depends on where we are, and I mean, we've been in some battles, and Kansas City in a playoff game a number of years back. You know, that place was deafening. You know, my guards couldn't hear me, and you know, played in Baltimore. We played in a lot of stadiums that it's hard to hear. And for big games, but you just do a good job of making sure you get close and you lean in and make sure your communication, you can't block without it. You have to be able to pass it on.
Yeah. By the way, do you like playing against Baltimore since they cut you?
I do. We've got the better end of them too. Yeah. So it's been nice. But Marcia Broda actually came back to the Colts to do radio stuff after he had cut me, and Manning used to bust me up all the time about it. He'd say, "You'd be the only guy in America who can't stand Marcia Broda." I said, "Well, he fired me, man." He was actually a super nice man, and it's business. I mean, the bottom line is they didn't know anything about me or who I was. I was just a body for them, and just something that had to be done.
What's your relationship like with Peyton? You two work closer together than anybody else on the team. And you've got to be on the same page. I mean, you must spend a lot of time together in film study or, just away from the field as well. Can you describe what that relationship is like?
Yeah, we have a good one. I tell people all the time, I liken it to a marriage, And I tell them all the time, he's the wife and I'm the husband because he has more control and he complains more. So that's why I tell him he's my wife. he hates that. So I always put that one on him. But it's a good relationship. You know, I think at the beginning of it, man, is it all starts with respect. And I respect the heck out of the way he plays this game. He studies as hard as anybody I've ever seen. He works as hard as anybody I've ever seen playing this game. And, you know, anybody who's willing to put in that kind of time, I'll do whatever I can do to make his job easier. And that's really the role that I look at, is whatever I can do to take pressure off of him. He's got so much going on as it is. Whatever I can do, whatever role I can play to take that off of him, I'm willing to do it. And if that's making calls before he has to make it, whatever he sees. And so those are the things that we talk about. You know, what are you looking at and why? And what can I do, Peyton, to get to that before you get to it? Yeah. And so over the years, that's what I've begun to do, is take those things off of him so he has less things to worry about. And it's been a good relationship because there's a lot of trust that has to be in that on both sides. You know, he has to trust that I'll get it done and, you know, won't leave him wide open to take a kill shot. And I think that he's seen how hard I work and what I do. And so when I give him my opinion, he takes it and he makes adjustments according to that as well. So it's been a really good relationship. I've been very fortunate and blessed to be here, man. Yeah. He's a fantastic player and has been a great community person, but a better on-the-field player than anything I could ever have imagined.
Yeah, and he must lean heavily on you. He must be really concerned about your knee, because I can't imagine he was another guy, you know, playing center for long there.
We talk about it. You know, football is one of those funny games that it really is next guy up, and you have to trust that the next guy. And even though you don't like it, you know, when he was hurt a few preseasons ago and Sorgi's in there, you got to play with who's there. Mm-hmm. You know, he's always, all right, you're getting better. I mean, hey, I'm getting better, man. But when we get there, man, we have a lot of fun playing.
Yeah. Is he, he's obviously the best known and best paid player on this team. He's a national sports figure. Is he pretty much one of the guys in the locker room, or is he kind of on a different level? I mean, do you guys joke with him like else?
Yeah. No, he's very approachable player-wise. He does not, his locker is right in the middle of the offensive line. He puts it there on purpose. You know, he wants to be one of the guys. He wants to be included. And, no, I give him all kinds of grief. I'm probably one of the few guys who can give him grief because I'm, all the other guys are like his kids now. You know, he's so much older than they are. I give him all kinds of grief, but he's a jokester. He has a lot of fun, And he really is. When he gets there, he's about football, he's about business, but in the locker room, he can laugh it up and have as much fun as the rest of us.
Ever flip him in the butt with a wet towel?
Oh, I'm sure. I put it on. Yeah, we'll put a smackdown on him, man. But he's a good practical joker, and he doesn't take himself too serious as far as that goes.
That's good, though. So what for you are career highlights? Obviously, winning in the Super Bowl stands above all else, but you know, as a center, you don't have a 70-yard touchdown run. You're not throwing a touchdown pass. So for you individually, are there certain games or even certain moments that stand out as a highlight for you?
Yeah, you know, through 12 years, there's a lot. I mean, there's a ton of things that I look back on and am very excited. You know, the first time that we beat Buffalo, and I'm blocking Ted Washington and Pat Williams one-on-one all game, and you know, I block them well. You know, those are big days when you block Grady Jackson. You know, all these players that I had grown up watching and you know, those were the, you know, John Randalls, and you get to block these guys on certain days when you become the team to beat in your division. You know, we took over Tennessee, and all those kind of little small moments that build up, those are ones that I look back on and really with a lot of pride, because they really are team things, you know, that are pretty remarkable. And then you look at individual-wise, certain blocks and certain games I go back to that would be highlights. You know, New England on the I-die touchdown, and, you know, I block Will Fork on his back. All those types of things. I picked up a fumble, scored a touchdown. Those kind of things are individual highlights. I think all the times that you get All-Pro or Pro Bowl, those are all cool things. But, you know, it's the moments that aren't publicized that are probably your most prized. You know, the moments before games when I'm in the locker room and I'm joking around with guys, and, you know, I tape up pictures of a defensive lineman who they're going to block and write notes that they're going to come and try to, you know, I'm going to come get you, or, you know, whatever it is. I just joke with guys and make fun of people who are nervous, to kind of break the ice. Those are the things that I look to, the plane trips to and away, you know, your hotel rooms the night before when you're going through pregame meetings and guys are impassioned and what we're talking about. And those kind of things, man, that's really what it's all about. And, and how much impact I've had on the team in general through the Christian influence, you know, starting Bible studies and helping guys restore marriages or whatever those things look like. Those are the things at the end of the day that are things that I look on probably greater than, you know, me knocking a guy down. We all get knocked down. So I've taken some wins and taken some losses.
I talked with Ray Donaldson last week, you know, kind of one of your predecessors at center, and he talked about kind of similar things, you know, springing somebody for a touchdown run or whatever. But every now and then there might be a game where he had trouble handling the guy. For him, Bruce Smith, you know, there was a game that he had difficulty with. Have you had games like that where, man, I'm struggling here, I'm having a hard time handling this guy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You'll have days where, you know, I've had days where Jamal Williams and I will be battling from San Diego, and it's an all-day affair, you know, and you're freaking battling this guy, you know, and you look over and you know, you need a help from a guy. Hey, listen, get this guy off me, or, you know, help me look back here. And all those situations come up as a player. And I think the best players are the ones who can admit that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the guy who quiets down and doesn't say anything and just takes a beating all day. It's the guy who looks over and goes, hey, man, you know, this is not going my way. I'm going to need a little help from you. And I gain respect from guys for guys when they do that, when they're honest. You know, I tell guys all the time, when you come off, don't lie to me, you know, because we're going to see it and we're going to talk about it. So you might as well just come out with it right away and say, it was my fault. I whiffed. I got knocked on my butt. You know, he was better than me. Whatever it is, and you talk about those things, because we all have players. They get paid a lot of money on the other side of the ball as well. And so you got to know they're going to be days, or they're going to have moves that beat you, and you just, you know, shrug them off. But that's the truth. It happens to all of us. And any player who says he hadn't had a bad day is telling you a straight up lie.
We've
all had those days. We've needed teammates to rely on to get it done.
You mentioned the touchdown that you got, the fumble recovery. Speaking of Ted Marchibroda, he I'm sure you've heard the call, you know, Jeff Friday.
Yeah. Jeff, see, again, he's stabbing me again. He fires me, messes my name up. Yeah, I have. I forget who it was, the first person to tell me that. And but Friday was actually a guy in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I laugh about it, man. He was just the moment of excitement got him, I think, got the best of him.
Your moment of glory, and you don't get credit for
wrong
it.
Name. That's right.
What is the heritage of Saturday? What nationality?
You know what? My real dad is adopted, and I've heard Irish, I've heard Spanish, I've heard all kinds of things. So, And I get letters periodically from people who were named Saturday or... And they're from all over. So yeah. I've never done a family tree to go back all the way. I've heard it from a couple different areas.
I'm not going to get into the details of the labor issues, but I take it you must enjoy being the player rep, you know, as a leader. Probably at times you don't.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if enjoy is the right word. Kind of put there would be the right word.
Did your teammates kind of shove you into that position?
Yeah, that was when I was young, and you know, people were all getting fired and cut for being it, so they were like, hey, Saturday, you be it, you know. So that was where I was placed in, but it's a role that I do take serious, just because the one thing that my wife and I have talked about ever since we've, you know, been blessed to start playing is I want to leave the game better than when I got here. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've done that on the field wise and off the field because of the Players Association. Just being able to tell guys and inform guys of things that they need to know, and how many guys leave our game bruised and broken, and, you know, you got to help them. And somebody needs to say, hey, listen, you know, you can get this help. You know, for your body, you can get this done. Here's a step you need to take to move forward on this. And the reason that there's so many former player issues is because that wasn't done in the past, you know, and it's getting caught up now. It's going to take time. There's no quick solution to all this, but, you know, the longer I've been in, the more things I've seen change for the better, and that's going to continue.
Yeah. Does it put you in an awkward position with management at all to be the player rep, or do you feel sometimes you're at odds with
you
them?
Can a bit, but the reality is I'm in a great situation because Ursay and I have a very good relationship. He knows I respect the heck out of the way he's run the Colts, and he's been very, very generous to me, mm-hmm. and has always been respectful of me. When we talk about union issues, even as a team, and he's in there, he is always very respectful of saying, hey, I know Jeff wants the best for this game and our team, and I want the best. And we'll figure a way out to compromise to get the best for everybody. And it's going to take compromise. And I don't know that every owner would be like that. And he's always been very respectful that way. And Bill Polian, he's done this so many times. You know, he goes back and tells me stories of, you know, the strikes back in the 80s of what happened and how they handled it in Buffalo, and, you know, all these different stories that he goes through. And he's just so honest about it. You know, there's no pretense in him. He says, Jeff, this is the deal. And so I can talk very frankly with Bill and say, hey, man, this is how I really feel about this issue. And he'll say, I agree or I don't, and here's why. And he'll give me the history, and he'll give me, hey, listen, this is why I feel like that. And so I really have had, and those are probably two of the more intimidating faces of our organization, but really in the NFL, because they both wield, you know, a lot of power, Ursay and Polian, in the way that they, you know, the power in the actual NFL. And so, but it's been good, and I've learned a lot. And when I represent my teammates, I feel like I represent our game as well. And so it's not just about the players getting everything that we want, because it's a want. We need to get the things that we need, mm-hmm. and the owners need to get the things they need. And in that compromise is where we'll find our solution. Because the bottom line is the fans pay all of us and mm-hmm. all of our salaries for a product on the field.
Yeah.
And we need to have it out there, and it needs to be a good one.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
What are your personal feelings on the 18-game schedule then?
I'm not a fan of it. Yeah. And I'm not a fan of it because I don't think it's been structured the right way. You know, my solution would be why not if it's all about the money that the fans are having to pay for preseason tickets and not getting value, then cut the preseason ticket prices.
Yeah.
You know, because a guy like myself, I would have never made the Colts if I didn't have four games.
Right.
Because I would have never gotten time. And what people don't realize, or what they're proposing, is cutting it down to two preseason games. Literally, the ones or the starters would play the majority of that first game and then probably take the majority of the second one off. Mm-hmm. Okay, so none of the guys who you're trying to see if they can compete and play in the game would get any time in game one. And in the second game, they wouldn't have enough other good players to play against to get a good perspective. So now you've cut out the opportunity for these undrafted rookie free agents to make squads. And the Colts, over the past 2 years, have 16 undrafted rookie free agents who are playing.
Yeah.
So that's 16 players that would have never gotten the opportunity just because they didn't get drafted. That's not fair.
Right.
I mean, that's not good for our game. I mean, you got John Renner, who went to the Hall of Fame recently, undrafted guy. There's a lot of undrafted guys who are great players in our game who I don't feel like it's fair. And that's really my main issue is you're hurting our game because you're hurting taking the best players out of it.
Yeah.
If it's all about what a guy did in college, getting drafted and getting the first chance at it, that's not really fair. You know, that doesn't – because you can miss on a draft pick, you know, because he's bigger than somebody or he's stronger, he had a better number or played better competition in college, doesn't mean that's going to, you know, translate to the pros. So, you know, the whole guys don't want to play because of the physical part, that part I'm not nearly as concerned about as what I think it does to the rosters and the ability for guys to make it in this game.
And it seems to me the undrafted guys bring a lot of soul to the game because you're the ones who, you know, you're unspoiled, obviously. You've come up from the bottom and you're going to have the best attitudes probably and the best work ethic, and that adds a whole lot to the game.
Yeah, there is absolutely no doubt that, I mean, Gary Brackett, who's our captain, undrafted guy, he would have, there's no way he would have ever made our team. You know, he's your captain. I mean, this guy is the lifeblood of your team. A guy like Bethea, he's a late round guy. You know, he may not, I mean, so you look at all these guys who have made and are making significant impacts on our team, and that's like that throughout, it permeates throughout the whole league.
Yeah.
And it's true. You bring the energy because you know you're a game away from packing it up.
Yeah.
And you don't have anything to fall back on. So you're going to work with a lunch pail, man, ready to fist fight to take it back.
Yeah.
And that's really the mentality that I think you'd be losing, you know, by taking those games away.
Yeah, yeah. Are you grateful that you went through the path you did, were undrafted and so forth? I mean, obviously, if you'd been a first-round pick, you would have made a lot more money early and so forth and not had to sweat it out. But has it been a benefit to you to come up the path you did?
I do. I mean, first of all, it fits. It fits my life. It fits who I am. I mean, nothing coming in college, going from defensive line to offense. I mean, it's never come easy, but it's always been the right way.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like I tell my wife all the time, my life would be totally different had I been drafted. I would not have made the good decisions or decisions that turned out to be good. I feel like that humility in it all kept me really grounded. You know, and I wasn't, coming out of college, I was not the most grounded man on the planet. So, you know, I had lived and loved playing in college football, but I had a wild streak. You know, I mean, I got after it, and so that part probably kept me in really good check and kept me in a balance of my life that I really needed.
Yeah, if you'd gotten that signing bonus and the first round status, you might have gone crazy. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, you just don't know. I didn't have the maturity, I don't think, to be able to handle something like that. I didn't have that mindset. You know, it was it would not have been the way that it is now.
What do you want to do after football?
That's a good question. You know, I don't really know yet. I thought I had decided years ago, and I really haven't. I'm going to kind of let it play itself out. I'm going to play until I'm done, and then obviously I have business opportunities that I could take advantage of and might do that. I've thought about politics. I've thought about a number of different things. So
coaching?
I have thought about coaching. The one thing about coaching is I probably, if I was going to do it, would do it on a high school level. Because my family is very important to me. And so the time that would be away from my family, I don't think like I would do that now. It would be something that I could look into once my kids got up and got through high school and began to go away to college. And, you know, then it was something I could look at. I would not want to do it now. There's a lot of time involved in that. And I would want to be good at it. And the other part about the young age is I would want to make an impact on the kids. I want to tell kids, listen, I've done this thing. You know, I've seen guys, you know, come in and you know, shoot out of the air. As stars, I've seen them go the other way and come crashing down. So be able just to share with guys, be able to influence their lives and really speak to them on the truth about what it really looks like.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. I think that's part that sometimes we miss. And when we're raising our kids, and it's not just about the game. There's so many players who are better than I am, but they never got the chance to show it because they made poor decisions or didn't do it the right way. And those are the things that our kids need to hear. Is, you know, that field stuff is great, but it takes a whole lot to get to that field.
Yeah.
And you know, making sure they understand the importance of that and understand the importance of it can be taken away so quickly. You know, I've seen some, you know, Charles Bentley was probably going to be one of the best centers our game has seen in a long time. LaCharles Bentley. He was an Ohio State guy, got his knee tore up, and then got an infection. I mean,
yeah,
ends his career. Did he make money? Sure. All that part I'm not talking about, but I'm talking about it's that fast. Yeah. You know, there is nothing promised in this game, but for guys to get a grip of that and understand, like, the true fun, that's Friday night.
Yeah.
You know, you go out for that, that's fun. You're cutting loose. You're getting buck wild. You know, you are doing what you are getting after it on that field. And there's no, you know, there is no pressure other than just going out and playing.
Yeah.
And I tell people all the time, when I go play, and I tell this to rookies, and you come in to take my job, you're not trying to take, you're trying to take food out of my family's mouth. This is a whole different avenue. This is not just about going and playing. This is about protecting, you know, like everybody. You know, you're protecting your job. You want to be the best at it, and you work. So your motivation is different, you know, than it is of just cutting loose and having fun and really enjoying that time. And college is the same way. You got, you're getting school paid for. I mean, go cut loose. Go make this thing what it should be, and don't make it a job so early, you know. Make it about the passion of our game.